This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, Jen.
Kim, how are you? It's been ages.
Ages, I tell ya. You know, it's like we just talked like 2 minutes ago, because we did.
I know. We record these almost back to back.
We do.
Two or three at a time. So, you know.
It's best that way.
For those of you that are just checking in, we are doing our 12 Nightmares Before Christmas series.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Basically, this is our third year of doing this series. Every day for the 12 days leading up to Christmas Eve, we will do a case where the day represents one murder victim or one body. Today, we are doing 5. So today's body count should be 5. Correct?
Five. $5 foot long.
And yes, we know it's morbid and it's very un-Christmassy, but you know what? It's Christmas time and you're listening to a true crime podcast. So, you know, there you have it.
And we do this sort of because it's a stressful time of year. You're wrapping presents, you're cooking, you're cleaning, you're baking, you're running around. And this is, just gives you a something. These aren't as heavily researched as they normally are.
Right. And to be honest, a lot of these cases, there's not a lot of info on them. So we don't have the info to do full cases. That's why they're a little bit shorter.
That is correct, Jen, which is a perfect segue to today's episode.
Number 5.
We never want to think that our loved ones, the ones we grew up with, could ever be evil. But as we know, Jen, there is real evil out there, and sometimes, oh, just sometimes, it is your brother or your son. Sometimes the person you love grows up to be the monster you never knew.
Ooh, this one's going to be good. Nice intro.
This is a serial killer. There's not a whole lot out there on him. I combined newspaper articles from the 70s, along with a Piers Morgan interview that they did. And the interview was good. It was more, it didn't go into a lot of his crimes, but it was more, gave you an idea of his personality, which is creepy to say the least. But it gave me more insight into him. They didn't talk a lot about his crimes or anything like that. It was more like you as a person.
Psychological evaluation type things.
Yeah, kind of. The fifth Nightmare Before Christmas takes us to Titusville, Florida. If this town sounds a little bit familiar to you, it's because it is located right by the Space Center in Florida. The time that this crime happened, it was just 4 years earlier when all the world was watching down there. Because you know what happened in 1969, that's right. Not only were you and I born, right? But Neil Armstrong would be launched into space for that fateful trip to the moon. And all the world was watching in 1969.
Unless you're a conspiracy theorist, then it never happened. It was done somewhere
in
Hollywood.
And then it was Photoshop. That's a whole nother podcast.
And we're not here to discuss that. I prefer to think good old Neil was up there bouncing around, taking one small step for mankind.
That is correct.
One giant leap for humanity.
Or whatever.
Or however that goes.
Pictures or however that goes. Exactly.
Neil and Buzz up there having a good time.
So it is December 10th, 1973, when a young man lured two underage hitchhikers into his car and he drove them to the outskirts of town. What he didn't know is that he picked up the wrong two girls to attack that evening. The victims fought viciously with the man. Frustrated, the man took out his gun and fired. Shocked and thrown off guard, When the gun misfired, the girls made a run for it, and they actually escaped. The two women went straight to the police to tell them what happened. They not only gave police a description of the man that had given them a ride, and also his car, but they had one other piece of information about this stranger, his name. Now, because this person really never left survivors, he didn't really go to great lengths to conceal things in his car that may or may not contain his name. And these two girls had noticed his name. It was in a book that was on the seat of the car, and it had his name in it. So they had the name of the man that picked him up.
Very observant. Good for them.
The next day, police go and they arrest a man by the name of Bernard Eugene Giles for assault and attempted rape. During his search, at the time of his arrest, they seized a 22-gauge pistol. Bernard Eugene Giles, who went by the name Gene to those who knew him, was born on April 9, 1953, in Titusville, Florida. He was the oldest child with two younger brothers and a sister. Now, it seemed like his childhood was pretty normal, and his siblings would attest to that. He belonged to what seemed like two loving parents who were still together. Now, Gene took an interest at an early age in art. He was very creative. He had a very creative mind. This was sort of his passion, right? He would earn good marks and good grades in school, all the way up into high school. But somewhere around age 16, somewhere around that sophomore year, something happened. There was a change. And it wasn't just him. His classmates would notice that. He was well-liked. He was popular by all who knew him. But right around that age of 16, he just changed. And, you know, maybe that's puberty. That happens a lot to kids. Doesn't make them killers, but, you know.
Sometimes mental illness sets in.
That's right. With puberty, that all comes in there. He didn't seem to be interested in school anymore. He just let his grades go. They plummeted. And he started to miss a lot of school. So he was actually forced to quit high school. Now, you got to remember back in the day, back then, they would actually, you know, ask you to quit. Today, as a teacher, and anybody listening that's a teacher, they make you go through hurdles and hills and jumps. And I mean, it's, they don't want you to quit school. But this was a different time, as we all know.
Well, back then, you could, I believe, you could get a fairly decent job at 16 by working in a factory or someplace. And
after leaving high school and trying to figure out what to do, he decided that he would like to learn the electrician trade. So he began working in that field after leaving high school. In 1972, at the young age of 19, he met a 17-year-old girl by the name of Leslie Joanne, and the two of them began dating. They would eventually marry. And in 1973, the now 20-year-old Gene and his younger wife welcomed a baby girl to the family.
Aww.
So with all this, you know, I mean, that's a lot of stress. There's a lot going on. You're a young guy, young wife, and you have to support
baby.
Them, all that stuff, right?
Throwing a baby into the situation makes things really stressful.
Really tough.
Especially
right?
when you're young.
So the family knew that they needed to get out. They needed to get on their own. So the young family moved into a mobile home park right in town. They looked like the perfect young family. But Jen, as we know, looks can be what?
Deceiving.
Deceiving. That's right. Perhaps it was the stress of being a young, newlywed father, or perhaps the time had come to finally release the monster inside that had been there all along.
That's never a good time.
It sure not,
just
is not.
Hide it. Don't let it go.
Bernard,
conceal,
Eugene.
Don't feel. Yeah.
Gene, at only 20 years old, would commit his first murder. Now, by serial killer stats, this is a bit young. However, we learned that it was just the beginning of not being a typical serial killer, if there is something like that, right? As far as his circumstances go.
Right.
In just 12 weeks, he killed five women with virtually no cooling off period. And again, this is not typical of the serial killer stats.
Right.
Or so says the textbooks and all those that study it, right? It was almost as if he snapped and just kept going, right?
Right. It was like 20. A slowed down rage murdering, you know, a rage killing type thing.
Exactly.
What it seems. Yeah. I don't know.
So we got to take a look at how this all came together. With that, you have to consider that the year is 1973 and people did something back then that they would never do today, or at least, you know, your parents would never let you do that. And that is what? Hitchhike. Thank you, Ted Bundy, right? So no parent would think anything about their kid hitching a ride to a nearby music concert or just a ride to the local strip mall at the time. It was an easy way for the kids to get where they wanted to go. Honestly, it was not a big deal. My older sister, you know, who graduated high school in 1974, mm-hmm. hitchhiked. It was just a thing they did, right?
Yeah.
Now, you also have to remember that the term serial killer at this point, again, I just mentioned Ted Bundy, wasn't really a thing yet. And in fact, it wouldn't become common in the vernacular of the crime world until about a decade later. Ted Bundy was at this exact point starting his heinous reign at this exact time that Gene Giles was doing his murderous torturing. Okay?
Right.
Gene's first victim was an 18-year-old young woman by the name of Nancy Jerry. On September 26th, he left his baby daughter at home with his wife, climbed in his car, and he went out. He said he got into his car that day to specifically go looking or hunting for a victim. A victim. Any victim. He didn't care. He's very honest about this. They had to be female, and they had to be available to him, i.e. hitchhiking or something similar, right? They had to be
easy target.
Easy to get. He said he saw Nancy on the side of the road in Titusville, thumbing for a ride, and he pulled over to get her. She got in and didn't suspect anything until Gene took a turn down a dark dirt road, and it was straight into an orange grove. Well, this was not where she was supposed to be going. Now, Gene claimed, and this is what I'm talking about, this stuff, it's from the Piers Morgan interview, and it's more emotional, and that's kind of like what I'm saying here, if you can go with me on that. It's very cold. There's a part in the interview that I'll tell you about later, but literally gave me, I don't know, it made me sick. Now, Gene claimed that Nancy didn't seem scared, thinking that he was, and this is part of the emotion thing that I was talking about, he's just going to rape her. You know, he's not going to kill her. And he's saying that. So, you know, she feels that I'm just going to rape her. So she's not really scared yet. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? She's 18, but okay. But this is his mind, right? This is how it works. And he actually said that in the interview. It's chilling. So he gets out of the car and he forced her to walk into some dense brush. And it was there that he shot her. Jerry would be found with a gunshot wound to the head on December 10th in the orange grove in which he took her to back in September. Now, even though she was not his first victim, she was the first one to be found. She was the first one to be located. Okay. So again, as I keep citing this interview, and I hope I don't get
because
sued
there's
for it,
not like a. No,
there isn't a lot on him, but you just have to go watch it. So really, I'm giving him kudos. But in the Piers Morgan interview, and this is why I'm a nerd, he asked Gene, how did you feel after committing that first murder? What did that feel like? Now, watching this, his pause was so long, I had to stop it. And I was like, I need to record this. I need to see how long. And
only you would
literally,
do something like that.
I know, because I'm a nerd. They kept the camera rolling. For those of you that may or may not know, I used to work in TV. So to me, this is very telling.
No,
right?
they should have
people would cut
stopped
it.
Right?
Cut
would it, cut yeah.
It. Exactly. But they didn't.
Dead air is never a good thing.
He took 14 full seconds to answer that question.
Wow.
And if you don't know how long 14 seconds is, it's a long time to have a camera rolling on you with you not saying anything.
That's longer than a pregnant pause.
I was actually going to set my timer and do it so the listeners could hear it, but I thought that was a little over the top. You can do it at your own. But anyway. When he finally did speak, he said, very stimulated, very provoked. I mean, the thing is, what is your passion in life? What is the thing that you like to do more than anything else? And you're doing it. You are so there that you see the atoms vibrating.
Oh.
It is difficult to describe.
Wow.
That was his answer after a 14-second pause. And I'm telling you, 14 seconds is a long time.
Wow.
So the first body,
okay,
the first victim that he did kill, because like I said, the first one found was not his first victim. The first victim was a 22-year-old mother of two boy toddlers, Paula Hamrick. Now, Paula was on her way to work, and Gene offered her a ride. Sadly, she got in his car. She went missing on November 17th and was discovered strangled to death on November 26th. She was nude with her hands tied behind her back. Gene did not remember her name.
Oh.
And as a matter of fact, he claims he doesn't remember any of his victims' names because Why would I do that? Why would someone embrace the names of their victims? I saw these women as objects.
And that's exactly why that's just so wrong.
And
they're
that's
humans,
his
they're
whole,
people, they're,
he's very
someone loved
like,
them
monotone. And... he's very in control of his emotions. He's very like that. Mm-hmm. And that's important to remember because I'm going to get to that in a minute.
Horrible human being.
In an article written December 15th, 1973, the Orlando Sentinel reported that the FBI was called into the case to determine, in fact, if Paula and Nancy could be linked, if their crimes could be linked. Now, at this point, Gene was sitting in jail on a $26,000 bond, which translates to about $150,000 today. He was sitting in jail for abducting those two girls who escaped, right? Mm-hmm. So at this point, they're starting to suspect, because it was very similar, that he abducted two girls, took them out to an orange grove, was going to attempt to rape and kill them, and he did pull a gun on them, and he would have killed them, right? But the gun misfired. So they're starting to put all this together and wonder if this is the guy that's been abducting girls and raping and murdering them at this point. There's several that have been missing, and Titusville's not that large. It's not that big of a city. So to have that many people from in and around that area go missing, younger girls, mm-hmm. it's very
uncommon.
Mysterious. Yes, uncommon. There you go. So as he's sitting in jail on his whatever, took us being a jerk, it's Christmas Day. A high school boy, high school kid, and his friend, they go out to fire a new gun that they had got for the holiday, right? And they go behind this trailer park. Well, it happened to be the same trailer park where Gene Giles lived. The boys lived in the neighborhood, too. As the boys are out there, and it's kind of woody, it's sort of like an orange grovey. It's very Florida. We all know, well, we don't all know, because if you're not from the States and if you've been to Florida, you probably don't know. But there's like groves and things like that, a little swampy, all that. So they go back there to shoot some guns and play with their new gun. Well, as they're back there, they see something that thinks, is that a what, Jen? What is that over there?
Mannequin?
Is that a mannequin over there?
At first, I was going to say gator, because you know you're building up
Florida. It could
Florida,
be a gator, too. Yeah, yeah, it's true. As they get closer, they notice that it is, in fact, a body, and the body's face down in the mud. There is also what looks to be like a pair of pants hanging from a branch near the body. As they get closer, there was no mistake that it was the body of a female. Now, this is a side note, this is just 200 feet from the trailer park in which the boys lived, as well as Gene Giles lived, and 800 feet from the door of the trailer of Gene Giles. So he murdered this victim and put 800 feet. You know how that is not very far.
It's a less than 5-minute walk. Yeah.
It's tiny, right?
Mm-hmm.
This victim was 17-year-old Carolyn Bennett.
Carolyn Bennett?
Carolyn
B?
Bennett.
Okay.
Yeah, with the Bennett. Sorry. You didn't mean to. Oh. 14-year-old Sharon Wilmer was the next to be discovered on December 26th. Once again, she was located in the groves behind the same trailer park where Giles lived. The site was very out in the open, as if anyone walking on a path would have found her body. Now, police knew right away that she was, in fact, 14-year-old Sharon because of the jewelry she was wearing. She had went missing. She was reported missing by her parents, and they had given specific jewelry to be on the lookout to the police officer. So they knew, they were pretty sure that this was, in fact, the 14-year-old girl, right?
14.
Again, she was merely yards away from Gene Giles' trailer.
It's almost like he now, didn't care.
Well,
he
and
just
he's going
like killed
so
her and
fast.
Threw her out.
He's going so fast, right?
Yeah. Like trash. Poor baby.
His final victim would be a 14-year-old named Christy Melton. Now, like I said earlier, there's not a lot on these victims. And because he's sitting in jail, he, you know, I guess he's given a little bit of leverage to play with the police officers, if you know what I'm saying. And we'll get to that in a second. But I could not find anything on Christy Melton. However, most of these victims were shot or strangled or both. Some of them were tied up. Not all of them had been raped, but partially. Part of them had, or part of them had attempted assault on them, I guess, and maybe he was disturbed, or who knows? I mean, you gotta remember, he's still only 20. Like, that's still pretty young, too, to be committing such heinous, violent acts.
Horrible, yeah.
Jen, at this point, of course, reasonably so, the town of Titusville's in full panic mode. there's a madman on the loose. They think he is. These bodies are coming up. They're finding them, you know, again and again and again. Right now, they're at five that they found. However, several women and girls had gone missing over the last year or so. So they're freaking out. Nobody's going anywhere. They've been advised, if you go out, make sure you stay together. Do not at all hitchhike ever, right? And I'm sure parents were like, you're not going anywhere. Sorry, right? As, of course, you would with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to go take a little look at how this all started for Gene Giles. So Gene Giles stated that at age six, he knew something was different. And he tells the story. And this story was in that interview with Piers Morgan, but it was almost in every newspaper article I found. And I just keep thinking that he definitely had a little psychology or psychiatry. Somebody got a hold of him and gave him this lingo and things like that. And you'll understand what I'm saying in a minute. So he tells a story about playing with a neighbor girl. Well, a bunch of the neighbor kids were all playing, but there was one neighbor girl in particular. And they would play a game called Kill the Witch. So the little girl at this point was being the witch, and she would run away, right? And then they would all chase her. Well, he recounts the story that he did. He did catch this neighbor girl. And he talks about the thrill of overpowering her and catching her. And he was standing over her, and, you know, it was his job to actually, you know, fake kill her. So he states that one of the first memories of all of this was equating the power and the sex that it had in it, that he would strangle her, and how good he felt, how excited he felt. I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe because he's only six, right?
But right. Sexually feel good? Like, was it
the
erotic?
Excitement? Like some, and this is where we go to the psychologist thing.
Okay.
So he says that this was, as he understands it, his sexual imprint, right? And that's the doctor lingo there, that he was playing with her and he strangled her. And he stated, even at this young age, he felt excited. He claims that from then on, he became obsessed with these thoughts, and he knew that eventually he would kill a woman, if not several women. So he talks about the sexual imprint. And if
at
you don't know what that
means. At six, he knew?
Yes.
That he would kill?
Yep.
Oh, Lord.
Yep. That's what he says. That high, that buzz he got from that was like anything else, right? And that he equated this to feeling good, I guess. And he states that it was a sexual imprint. Now, if you don't know what that is, because of course I looked it up, because I mean, I figured I knew what he was talking about.
You want to see if you got one?
Yes,
see if I have a sexual imprint.
Yeah. It's basically how it is imprinted on you and how you view sex, how that applied to you. For instance, if you were a younger girl and the first time you had some sort of sexual experience, it was with a much older man, like somebody that's closer to your dad's age. So then you have a daddy thing, right?
Or
so that is your sexual imprint, that something that has imprinted itself on you, and that is your thing,
like,
right?
Boudreaux with the high heel shoes.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of like a fetish. Yeah, exactly. I wish I would have said that, because that seems so much more succinct, but okay, thank you. So at age 16, he recalls another story, and this was that he was walking down a sidewalk and he passed a woman on a street. He immediately had this intense feeling that he was going to kill her. He wanted to kill her. He could kill her. And he talks about that feeling that was just, it was almost overwhelming, that he couldn't control it. He had a knife with him, and he knew at that moment he could kill her, or he could keep walking past her. He fought the urge, and lucky for that girl who doesn't even know how lucky she is, he walked past her. That's just shocking to me. I don't think a lot of 16-year-olds, other than the one we talked about in episode 3, has this urge to kill. I mean, I hope not. I would hope most humans don't have that, right?
I would hope so. There's more than we would like to think that do.
That is true.
And if there's not, then we're not going to do podcasts for very long in the future.
That'd be terrible. I don't want to talk about that. So Gene Giles would claim that to murder women was his life's passion. And he said that to Piers Morgan, and he said that in an article. He said and believed that this was his driving force in his life. He knew he would commit murder. He said he knew that at age six. He knew that this was going to happen. And it wasn't like if, it was when. It was when, and he knew that. And that day that he got in his car at age 20 and got in that car and drove. He knew what he was doing. Like, he purposely got into that car to go find that little girl, Nancy Gerry, and commit his first murder, right? Mm. So this brings us back to the cases and the police and all that stuff that they're doing. So the police were able to connect the gun that killed Nancy Gerry to Gene Giles. The gun that murdered Nancy had belonged to him, right? And they knew that. They were able to connect that. So they went in and they started pressuring him. They continued to pressure him. We know you're involved. We know you're involved with her. We know you're involved with all these other women we found. You just have to admit it. Gene, of course, because that's what they do. He's maintaining his innocence. And at this point in the investigation, there are more than 11 young women or girls that had been reported missing since August of 73. So not even a year, right? From that little town, that little area. That's tiny, right?
Right.
They have the missing girls, and then they also have these murdered bodies that they found. They had found them all around November. He started, his first kill was in September, but they started finding them around the end of November and then into December. Keep that mind-wise.
Right.
So by January, many had been located. The missing girls, not the dead ones, had been located, and he was no longer a suspect in those missing girls cases. A lot of them had run away, or they went to stay with a friend, or they just were hitchhiking and living their best life, whatever. So the judge in the case, along with his attorneys, filed for a psychological exam to make sure he was actually fit to stand trial in the case of one of the dead girls. It was determined that he was, in fact, not insane. He did not suffer from any mental illness or abnormalities. He was declared sane, and a trial date was set for April 29th, 1974. And I do have to admire that they go a lot faster then than they sure do now. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It could take years, not months.
Exactly. It's almost, it's a death crawler. I don't know. It's horrible.
It was decided by the Brevard County Attorney's Office that if he was convicted, they would definitely seek the death penalty in against him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as we know, Jen, what's going to happen? You can guess what's going to happen because it so often happens. These killers, what do they want to do?
Avoid the death penalty. That's what I was going to say. I couldn't get it into words.
I'm going to make a plea deal here. This happens all the time. So he confessed to the murder of Hamrick, which was the first body found, but not his the second person he killed. He confessed to the murder of her in April. And then he pled guilty to the murders of three remaining girls in late July. So he let them sit on that for a while. A couple months pass, and then he does admit to murdering the three remaining girls at that point. He also admitted to a series of non-lethal, non-fatal attacks and some attempted murders on other women. All of this, his admission of guilt, admitting all this, freed him up from the death penalty. But he earned himself, that lucky guy, five life sentences on August 13th, 1974. Okay?
I can dig that.
After his conviction, Bernard Eugene Giles was transported to serve his sentence at the Florida State Prison in Bradford County. Okay. He's going to live his life there, right?
It's fine by me.
But in October 1979... Gene Giles escapes with two other prisoners. With the help of a few handmade smoke grenades, he and his accomplices manage to distract the guard dogs and the prison guards, after which, using locksmithing tools, they manage to make a small gap in several rows of wire through which they escaped. In a subsequent search, police stalked out his ex-wife. That was the one, obviously, thank goodness she wised up, the one that with the baby girl.
Right.
And had filed for divorce.
Oh, good.
Well,
good for him.
Police contact her and say, listen, we have a hunch. We've received a tip, or maybe we just think that he may be planning to come to your house and kidnap and or kill both you and your daughter, right?
Terrifying.
So, of course, they put, you know, they put watch on her. They're keeping her under wraps and all that good stuff. Move her. But thank goodness he was found only 5 miles away from the prison 26 hours after escaping. Because where are you going to go? You know what I mean?
Right.
Where are you going to go? You've escaped in this town. So he was found guilty of escape again and was given an additional 15 years imprisonment on top of the 5 life sentences. Okay.
Well,
so that
so
is
he's not
going to
get out.
He will not get out. Thank God. Now,
how old is he now? That he was born in 53, you said?
Yeah, 53. So he is
he's older.
No,
he's 70 something.
Yeah, he's 70. I don't know. I don't do math. It's hard. It is hard, Jen. But let me say this. Earlier I mentioned, and if you can go watch this interview, it's just creepy. There's two things here I want to mention. All right. So like this whole time he was
67. I did the math.
Very matter of fact with this stuff, you know, why should I know their names? That's just weird to do that. I don't want to embrace the people that I killed. Very whatever.
He didn't want to see them as human is what it sounds like. That made the killing easy, probably. Or easier.
He saw them as objects. They weren't women. He didn't know them. A couple things. So Piers Morgan asked him. Piers Morgan needs to pay us money too for this, but not really. So Piers Morgan asked him, did you ever think about killing your wife? Gene is perplexed. I mean, he's confused. And he's like, my wife? No, I knew her. Why would I kill her? They were just objects. They weren't people to him. That's why he never bothered to learn their name.
Right.
One bit of emotion that I did see, and like I said, it kind of startled me. In fact, I watched it several times because I couldn't believe it, was at the end, Piers Morgan said something like, don't you think that you, do you have anything to say to the victims' families? And he goes, no, what? And it was like that loud and that shocking. That was the most emotion. And Piers Morgan's like, well, don't you think you should say that you're sorry? And he never would say it. He roundabout in a way said it, but he never said it. He said, why should I say that? They're gone. It doesn't change anything, but he never would say it. And I was like, he's really psychotic. I mean,
he has to be a psychopath or a sociopath or.
But even they usually, they fake it. You fake it. They learn to fake it. Right. And he's not even doing that. He won't even give him that. He's like, whatever. No, why would I? And that was the most
tough guy
anger or anything that I saw. And like I said, it startled me because he got angry. You could see he was angry. Like if I was Piers Morgan, I'd be like, guard, I'm out. Right. Because it was like he was angry that he was asked that question.
Oh, I'm sure with Piers Morgan in the room, there's guards all around the room. Yeah. They're not
finally,
taking any chances.
When I went on Reddit and stuff. This was all done. And like I said, there's not a whole lot there because he was young and the crimes were committed so fast. And there's just not a lot out there.
You would think with all that murder in such a short period of time that the media would have descended.
It was a different
all
time,
over
though.
Titusville.
Early 70s.
But like
But earlier, like I said, the serial killer that wasn't in the vernacular yet. That didn't exist yet.
Yeah, so but this the was killing of that many people so quickly.
And young, 14?
Young girls. Yeah, you would think that some publisher of a newspaper would say, hey, I think people would want to read about this. I think people might want to protect their young daughters.
Mm-hmm. Chilly and cold. Let me say that. But the one thing, and I think it was a European interview, I don't know, but Bernard Eugene Giles had a pen, like a writing utensil pen in his pocket, which in prison, that's a shank. Like,
yeah.
Right?
Easily become a shank.
And so that stayed in his pocket the entire time Piers Morgan did that interview. And I don't think Piers Morgan knew it. I think somebody called his attention to it later. And it might have even been like a Reddit person. I can't remember where I got that information. It might have been on Reddit. But anyway, it was just,
wow.
And then I thought, well, of course, Piers Morgan that's not his victim. That's not his type. He would never hurt a man, right? He liked the sex, the thrill.
Wow.
So anyway, there is also, in my show that I plugged that also needs to show us, Some Love is Evil Lives Here. That's actually how I found this guy, because they interviewed his brother and his sister, but they didn't, it was more learning about their brother being a serial killer. So it was sort of their emotions and the things that they thought and growing up with him. But that made me aware of him. So then that's when I went down the rabbit hole of trying to find out info about him. And like I said, there's newspaper articles, but because he was sitting in jail already after the two were caught, I don't think there wasn't a lot of information about them. You know what I'm saying? So on that show, Evil Lives Here, that I talked about with his brother and sister being interviewed, and you know, take it for what it's worth, but his brother tells the story of about how he was in high school and one of their mutual friends comes up to him and says, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you talk to Gene? I need my soul back. Yeah, soul. You heard that? Like S-O-U-L. And Gene's brother's like, what are you talking about? And he goes, I sold my soul to Gene. And the brother, of course, is like, I don't understand what you're saying. And he goes, well, your brother's been going around and he's been offering people money to buy their souls. And I did. I gave him my soul in exchange for some money and I decided I needed it back. Well, the brother goes home and he confronts Gene about it and was like, what is going on? Well, Gene tells his brother, I already know I'm going to go to hell. I'm buying souls so that I can form a ladder and crawl out of hell when I'm down there. And all that was back when he was in high school. That's pretty alarming and startling, if it's true. Again, that was from Evil Lives On, with his brother and sister being interviewed about Bernard Giles. So that is the story.
And you are right.
Nightmare.
He is a very extremely little known serial killer.
I don't know why. I don't know if it was because of when it happened and then Ted Bundy came along and like five victims is nothing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't figure that out. And
but you have to, I mean, the Manson murders had so much press going on. Maybe it was one of those things that the, because this was 69, right?
No, 73.
73.
Okay, but so it was right after Manson. So
you would think that the press would be on it and because that was just a circus.
I do recommend, if you're interested, to go. Just, it's chilling. Just how, I don't know. And like how he kept saying, this is my life. And, you know, he asked Piers Morgan, he's like, what do you love more than anything? What is your life's passion? Something that you just, it's your dream that you want to do. That, and I'm doing it. That's what I was put on this earth for, is to kill women. And I was just like, that is freaking scary. That's scary.
Yeah, those sociopath, psychotics, whatever you want to label him, those are the emotionalists. Violent killers are scary.
So he's exactly where he should be. Scary. And one of my new favorite things, because I'm twisted, not in a bad way, maybe, is now is I always go and look up their pictures and check on these people and looked them up, because you can go and just look up these people serving their sentences wherever they are. So that's what I do now.
On the Google?
On the Googles. Yep. So anywho.
Wow.
That's it, Jen.
He's scary. I'm glad he's...
He is a scary... Caught exactly where he needs to be.
Put away for good with extra time.
To stay there forever.
For
and
good
ever.
Measure. Yeah, he could rot there.
Yep.
Hope he does. Yeah.
That's it. Whew. And so tomorrow we got number six, and that is passing the ball back over to you.
That's me.
And catch.
I'm ready. Ready to go.
All right, Jen. Hey, guess what?
What?
Until then, until tomorrow, remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
A bunch. I'm sorry, let me get a drink.
drink.
It's ice water, drink. It's good. No, it's regular water. And finally, I'll leave y'all with this, because I'm from Missouri. I talk funny. Y'all. I don't really say y'all. I say you guys.
I'm
from Missouri. We always
y'all.
Say you guys. We say you guys, right? Hey, you guys. Like I said, there wasn't a whole lot on this. Can I say that anymore? Like I said, there wasn't a whole lot on this. But so anyway, I go down
rabbit holes
and
look
Cam? For things.
Hey, Cam.
Yeah, is there a lot on
this? Was there a lot on this? Did you find a lot of information on this case?